Can I ask you please to take out your Bibles and to open them to Ruth chapter 1 and also to grab the leaflet as you were given in. On the inside, as usual, there's an outline that will help you follow along this talk. It'd be good for you to have that open in front of you. If you were with us last week, you'll remember the awful taste in our mouths as we got to the end of the Judges series. It painted a distressing picture of the moral decay at the heart of Israel and the chaos that was devastating God's people. In fact, Judges finished with the words there on your handout at the top left. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. You'll also recall that as we finished the series, I promised you that there'd be a glimmer of hope this week as we shifted our focus from the big picture anarchy and lawlessness that was gripping and tearing the nation apart and instead zoomed in on a single family at the time. So in fact, Ruth chapter 1 verse 1 is going to begin in the days when the judges ruled. Now actually, Ruth is such a lovely story that we're going to have the entire of Ruth read to us today, all four chapters. To help us to listen well, I've asked Alicia from our 6 p.m. gathering if she will read it for us one chapter at a time. And as is often my habit, after each chapter, we're just going to pause and I'm going to make a few comments to help us reflect on the Bible passage that's just been read. Now, the thing is, as I was preparing my talk this week, it struck me that actually this is the perfect opportunity to speak from a first-person narrative, from a first-person perspective, from one of the characters. Obviously, that's a bit tricky because the main character is a woman. So for something a little bit different, a bit of fun today, and given that actually Ruth feels like a bit of a feel-good rom-com, my wife Wendy is going to help me deliver the talk. She's going to speak from Ruth's perspective, and I'm going to speak from Boaz's perspective. And for that reason, I've simply called this talk, When Ruth Met Boaz. Okay, so here we go. Ruth chapter 1, Alicia's going to read to us. Please follow along in your Bibles.
In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness, as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they had arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning.
Good morning to you all. My name is Ruth, and I'm here to tell you my story. It's the story of how I came to belong to Israel, accepted as one of God's chosen people, part of his amazing plans for humanity. My story begins with my in-laws, Naomi and Elimelech, for the record. They're the best. They're Jews. And a few years ago, they emigrated from Bethlehem to Moab, which is where I am from. They had a few reasons. One was the terrible famine in the land at the time. But the main reason was that life had gotten so bad in Israel. You might have heard about the spiritual and moral decay that had completely corrupted Jewish society. It was a lawless anarchy with no king in the land and everyone doing as they saw fit. And so in desperation, Naomi and Elimelech, did you know his name means God is my king? They emigrated from Israel in search of a better life. And in so doing, they left behind the very land that God had promised to their ancestors, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, which tells you just how hopeless they felt, as if God had given up on his people. When they left, they brought two sons with them, two strapping young men, one named Mahlon and the other named Chilion. Now, sadly, Elimelech died. But eventually I married Mahlon, and another girl from my town, Orpah, she married Chilion. And everything went very well for about 10 years, until both Mahlon and Chilion died, which meant that Naomi, my mother-in-law, had now lost both her husband and both her sons, leaving her stranded in Moab with no biological family of her own, just two foreign daughters-in-law under her roof. So when she heard that the famine in Israel had finally ended, she decided to return home, which made perfect sense to everyone. And really, that would have been the end of the matter, except that to this day, and I don't really know why, but I decided to go with her. And that made no sense to anyone. I'd never see my family again. I'd be a foreign woman in Israel, a widow, no less, with no prospects for remarriage or employment. And yet, as I said, I felt compelled to stick with my mother-in-law and take my chances back in Israel. Maybe a part of me had been won over by this little Jewish immigrant family who had so warmly welcomed me in to their family. I remembered the stories they'd told around the dinner table over the years. The bigger and better story of God's promises to Abraham, the rescue of his people from slavery in Egypt under Moses, and the taking of the land under Joshua. And I had this sense that despite the hardship and the suffering, they still believed Yahweh cared for his people and that he would never abandon them. And so I pledged to Naomi, "Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." And even though she tried to talk me out of it, I could tell she had my best interests at heart, I wasn't going to be deterred. So off we set, back we went, back to her home of Bethlehem. Although you'd hardly call it a hero's welcome home. Yes, yeah, some people did remember her, but there wasn't a whole lot to celebrate. In fact, Naomi herself was so sad she told everyone to stop calling her Naomi. Her name meant pleasant. Instead, she asked people to call her Mara, which means bitter. We arrived as the whole town was celebrating the beginning of the barley harvest, and I found myself wondering, with time, could the God of Israel enable my mother-in-law to mend and heal her broken heart? And if he did, what part might I, a foreign woman from outside the covenant, what part might I play? I wonder.
Chapter 2. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up whatever leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they answered. Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, "Who does that young woman belong to?" The overseer replied, "She is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi." She said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters." She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the amount of barley she had gathered and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabite said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go out with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law.
Well, hello everyone. My name is Boaz. This is my story. Now, let me start by saying that in all honesty, life hasn't quite turned out the way I expected it would. It's true, I've been pretty successful. I've made plenty of money. Everything I have comes from the hand of our generous God. But I'm still alone, without a family, and no one to share his provisions with. Now, please don't mishear me. I'm not complaining. I have been so incredibly blessed. And I know that marriage is not everything, and it's not for everyone, and that marriage certainly won't complete me. Only the Lord can do that. But sometimes I do find myself wondering why, amidst all the good things God has given me, why he's not given me a wife. Thing is, even as I say it out loud, I am so thankful that I've made peace with my disappointment, that I think I've learnt the secret of contentment in any and every situation through him who gives me strength. Anyway, sorry about all my rambling. This wasn't meant to be a story about my love life or lack thereof. This is actually the story of what happened the other day when I went out to my fields to see how the harvest was going. And I spotted, off in the distance, a young woman gleaning amongst the scraps. Now, actually, this is not a particularly uncommon sight in Israel. We Jews always left the gleanings behind because, in that bigger and better story we belong to, our ancestors were slaves in Egypt before God rescued them through Moses and brought us into this land flowing with milk and honey, which meant that as a people, we knew what poverty was like. And so we always looked out for those who had less than ourselves. In fact, Leviticus 23 commands us, when you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Instead, leave them for the poor and for the foreigner residing amongst you. I am the Lord your God. So when I asked who she was, my men said she was the Moabitess who lived with Naomi. And of course, at that point, well, I knew exactly who she was, who they were talking about, because everyone knew about Ruth. See, Ruth was the foreign woman born outside of God's people in a faraway Gentile land who'd shown unheard of loyalty in following her mother-in-law back to Israel and leaving her own family behind. Of course, no one really knows why. Naturally, there was all the usual gossip and speculation and innuendo that you get in a little country town like ours. But Naomi and Ruth kept to themselves, and they refused to be drawn in, which made them into a little bit of an enigma. What I did know was how poor they were, and I knew that in a man's world, they had no chance of improving their prospects. Now, actually, it turns out that they are distant relatives of mine. Elimelech and I are from the same clan. So what I did was that I quietly told my men to ensure that they left plenty behind for Ruth to gather and to not embarrass her when she did. In fact, I encouraged her to keep coming back to my field because, sadly, and I hate to say this, women are not always treated well, even in Israel. There is no king, and everyone does as they see fit. In fact, you might have heard of that horrific story about the 400 virgins of Jabesh Gilead and the 200 young women of Shiloh who were all forced into marriages without their consent. So I told Ruth, well, this was the least that I could do on behalf of our people and in the name of our God to honour this intriguing woman who had thrown her lot in with his people Israel. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. So off she went, carrying enough food to last her and Naomi for a while. In case you don't know how much an ephah is, it's 13 kilos. 13 kilos of threshed barley. I don't know if I'll ever see her again. There's no particular reason to expect that I would. But even if I don't, Ruth is a reminder that ours is a God of second chances, of fresh starts, and of new beginnings.
Chapter 3. One day, Ruth's mother-in-law Naomi said to her, "My daughter, I must find a home for you where you will be well provided for. Now Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfume, and get dressed in your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I am your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am a guardian redeemer of our family, there is another who is more closely related than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your guardian redeemer, good, let him redeem you. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized. And he said, "No one must know that a woman came to the threshing floor." He also said, "Bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out." When she did so, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and placed the bundle on her. Then he went back to town. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "How did it go, my daughter?" Then she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today."
Hi there, it's me again, Ruth. Last time I spoke to you, Naomi and I had just returned from Moab. We were uncertain of what God might have in store for us. Well, something amazing has happened. A distant relative of Naomi's, Boaz, let me glean in his fields. And as a result, we've managed to eke out a living. Yes, there is still chaos in the time of the judges, but Boaz has shown that some of God's people are still faithful to the covenant. They love the Lord their God with all their heart and their soul and their mind and their strength. And because of that, they also love their neighbor as themselves, as Leviticus 19 insists. It's made me reflect, really, about how the way that God treats us shapes how it is that we're to treat one another. You could say the vertical shapes the horizontal. Perhaps that might catch on. Anyway, I think the kindness of God's people finally helped Naomi's bitterness to lift. Because last night she came into my room. She perched on the end of my bed, and with a glint in her eye that made me think, "Oh, there's trouble here," she said she'd been thinking about my future. She said it was her turn to look after me, because when she is gone, my position will become very tenuous here. A foreign-born widow in Israel is at risk of being an outcast or destitute. And although the Lord is in control, or perhaps because he is, that doesn't mean we just sit back and are passive. So she started to tell me this long, convoluted story about an ancient Jewish custom that I'd never heard about before, called levirate marriage, which is apparently in Deuteronomy 25. Apparently it was designed to ensure a family name would not die out because of a lack of male descendants. The short version is that if a man died without an heir, then in order to protect his name and his widow, a male blood relative, a guardian redeemer, they called it, could marry the widow, and the first son they bore would carry the dead man's name and be entitled to his estate. And this is what took me by surprise. Naomi told me she'd come up with a plan to see if Boaz would be willing to redeem me. Well, I'll spare you all the details of what came next because it is a little bit racy and there are children here today, and even now I find myself blushing a little bit when I think about it. Naomi's plan involved me putting on a slinky dress, waiting till he went out drinking one night, sneaking onto his property, hiding till he came home tipsy and fell asleep, and then lying down next to him. Nothing happened, I promise. But then I was to wait and see what happened when he woke up. Well, no prizes really for guessing what happened. When Boaz woke up, he jumped up in surprise and screamed. I'd fallen asleep, so I woke up in surprise and yelled as well. After we both calmed down, I was able to ask the question, would he be my guardian redeemer? At this point, he said the strangest thing. He said he was flattered that I had asked him. He knew he wasn't the youngest or the best-looking man or the wealthiest, but that I'd seen something more important. I'd seen he was kind and that he loved the Lord and that he loved God's people. And so, to cut to the chase, Boaz said yes. The next morning, he got me home safely under the cover of darkness to protect my honour. And he even gave me an engagement present. Given how we'd met, I wonder if you can guess what it was. Barley. Although there was one small obstacle. Apparently, there's another male relative closer than Boaz. So to do things properly, Boaz wanted to give him a chance to step in first. But since that guy hasn't done anything before now, I figure it will probably be okay. But in any event, Naomi said, we wouldn't have long to wait. So let's see.
Chapter 4. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat down there just as the guardian redeemer he had mentioned came along. Boaz said, come over here, my friend, and sit down. So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, sit here. And they did so. Then he said to the guardian redeemer, Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me, as I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line. I will redeem it, he said. Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth, the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. At this, the guardian redeemer said, then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it. Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the guardian redeemer said to Boaz, buy it yourself. And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi and all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today you are witnesses. Then the elders and all the people at the gate said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrath and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. When he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The woman said to Naomi, praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he be famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth. Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said, Naomi has a son. And they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, who the father of David. This then is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nahshon, Nahshon the father of Salmon, Salmon the father of Boaz, Boaz the father of Obed, Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David.
Well, it's me, Boaz. I'm back to tell you the conclusion to my story. Last time, I told you about how I'd been able to give a small measure of help to my distant relatives, Ruth and Naomi. God has been so generous to me, how could I not be generous to those who have been less fortunate? To be honest, I thought that was the end of the matter, until things took an interesting turn the other day, when, out of the blue, Ruth totally surprised me by letting me know that she was interested in me. Now, at first, I was completely blown away. I'm pretty old now. I figured my time for marriage had passed, which, as I said before, I was quite okay with that because God has been so good to me in so many other ways. But then I thought to myself, imagine what it would be like spending the rest of my days with this remarkable woman. And suddenly I realized I was interested as well. At that point, I remembered that Ruth actually had a closer relative than me who could marry her and inherit the land that Naomi owned. It was lying barren because she was unable to farm it. Thankfully, and just to cut a long story short, because, you know, quite frankly, I know you don't care about that other guy anymore. I think he's a loser. Let's be serious. He lost, I won, right? When I asked him if he wanted to step in, he declined, so in I swooped, and all of a sudden, Ruth was mine. In fact, I think from now on, you can call me Smooth Boaz. Well, after that, everything happened in a blur. And we got married straight away. The elders of the town and all the people prayed for us. And sure enough, and I'm not embarrassed to say this, we've just had a honeymoon baby, whom we named Obed. For both of us, he is the culmination of God's blessings to our families. He is the convergence of all our hopes and dreams. In fact, you should have heard the midwives and the women of Bethlehem carry on at his birth to his doting grandmother. They said, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age, for your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth." Praise be to the Lord indeed. Well, as we wrap up, I can think of at least two reasons why God is worthy of our honour. Firstly, God has given my wife, that's still taking some getting used to, but God has given my wife a pivotal role to play in his plans for his world. You see, back in Genesis 12, God had promised Abraham that all peoples on earth would be blessed through him. And that's exactly what's happening now. That's what's happening through our small but growing interracial family. Ruth, a Gentile Moabitess, a foreigner and stranger to the covenant, has been adopted into Israel. And she's given birth to a son. Which actually makes sense when you think about it, because the God of Abraham is also the God of all the nations of the world. The second reason why God is worthy of praise is because he has even turned Naomi's bitterness into joy. See, She's stopped going by the name Mara, and actually she wants to be known as Naomi again. Because God never forgets his people, and he's always faithful to his promises. I'm pretty sure Naomi's going to be an amazing grandmother. Ruth said that she was a pretty good mother-in-law, but I reckon she's going to be super nana. You wait and see. Who knows what God is going to do through our descendants, through Obed and his children and his children in the generations to come? Maybe one of them might grow up one day to be king in Israel, if we ever get one. For the record, I have to say, I'm partial to the name Jesse and to the name David as well. Anyway, that's my story. Actually, that's our story. Praise be to the Lord indeed. Well, let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the kindness and mercy that you show us. Thank you that you're always faithful to your promises and you never forget your people. And as this week ahead approaches, thank you for the reminder once again of all that you've done for us in your own Son. Thank you for his life, his death, his resurrection, and the promise of his return. Help us in this week ahead to be a people who fix our eyes firmly on him, the author and perfecter of our faith. Amen.